All right, folks, let's take our seats. We're going to get started. Welcome to the People's Rights Speaker Picnic Meeting. Glad to have you all here, especially the new people. Is there anyone that's here for the first time? All right, what's your name and how'd you hear about us? All right. Welcome, Caroline. Glad to see you. Today we're going to have one of our favorite people, Robert Lowe, doing a little talk for us. And this is going to be very interesting. Robert is a change management consultant. And for those of you that don't know what that is, he goes into large corporations and streamlines their processes and helps them become more efficient and get their operations working in a much better way. So he's got a different perspective on our problems that we're facing in society. So he's going to talk to us about his methodology behind addressing those problems. But before we bring Robert up to the microphone, I just wanted to clarify a couple things about our meeting. First of all, we have a speaker for an hour, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more. And then we'll have a question and answer period after that. And during the question and answer period, let's try to keep it two questions and let Robert answer those questions. Because after the Q&A portion of the meeting, we're going to have an open mic for anybody to come up and promote any events they have going or talk about whatever they want to talk about. So if you've got a diatribe you've been saving, just save it for the open mic period at the end and you'll get your chance. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Robert Lowe.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, Adam. Really appreciate it. All right. Well, thank you, Adam, for that kind introduction. Can everybody hear me? Maybe put this up a little closer so you can hear me. Okay, great. Thank you so much for having me here. I really appreciate your time, and I really appreciate you guys opening your forum up for me to just share my journey around the national process and where I've been and where I'm going and where I plan to be. I think first and foremost, I should say that I'm a pretty simple man. I grew up in Ventura, which is a little small beach provincial city. It's gorgeous, great little beach bedroom community. The days last forever. But I am a product of the public education system. I grew up going to an public elementary school, middle school, and high school. And even my college career, I started out in a public institution. So I have intimate knowledge of what the public school system offers. So I relate to that in many ways. And I didn't really start to question these institutions, these public sectors, until 2015 and 2016, where we can talk a little bit about that later on, but I'm going to go continue my introduction. So I am Robert Lowe. I am a change management consultant. I go into organizations generally well-branded, but right now I've been working with smaller companies that operate through private equity and help them with massive changes through strategic initiatives. I generally help them with the organizational architecture. So I do more like organizational design, process reengineering, and systems implementation. So I'll help our organizations kind of redesign themselves from start to finish, but a lot of change. So I'm used to being in a change environment. I hold a lot of different titles in this world, and I also wear a lot of different hats. I am a founder and CEO of an app called Allset. Allset is a free bartering and favors app, and there is a paid service feature to it. Because we haven't weaned off from the fiat money system, I want to ensure that we have something that would have continuity to the app. But the gist of it is really about the bartering and favors. That's really the key to the app. The paid service feature, obviously, you can get on and earn money from it. It monetizes the app itself. It's 50 cents to transact. But the bartering and favors, again, it's free. So that's a feature I really advocate for. Usually, when people ask me what is the app about, I tell them it's a bartering app. And most people who are not familiar with bartering used to be our legacy system. It was a system that actually pretty much how we traded before the advent of commerce. So once commerce came into place, barter kind of, you know, subsided. But it's important to think of it more like for like, good for good, service for service. Bartering is a very important part of our, I think, helps us to become better community because it helps instill values. So it's a closed system. It's a closed system, which means that there isn't an ability for someone who's on the spectrum or somebody who might be a sociopath to gamify the app. So like in the money fiat system, which has a closed system, you can actually gamify it and you can have people who can reap the benefits and then control the system. That's a very important aspect of the app that I think I should bring out. And also, it's under the auspice of the term Ubuntu, which is an African term. I'm not sure if a lot of you guys know what Ubuntu means, but it means essentially, I am because we are. So usually in African tribes, when a child coming of age creates a fraction or commits something that's kind of a frowned upon no-no, the tribe surrounds that child, the adolescent coming of age, and instead of chiding that adolescent, they remind that person of all the great things that they've done. So it's essential, as I think communities, to really be able to help each other grow. So the idea is that if you aren't successful in one area in the app, that you can reinvent yourself. So bartering, again, is a very important thing. So favors, you know, if I decided that I didn't want to go to college or you had no intention of going to college, or say like I see some folks that are a little older, so you probably have children. Your children decided they didn't want to go to college. So that, let's say that then they have a skill set that they want to foster. They are good at either piano, teaching piano, or maybe teaching surfing, or they're good pet sitters. Whatever their skill set is, they could do favors in exchange for reviews. It's important that then they get enough reviews that they can switch over to paid service side, if ultimately that's what they wanted to do. You get enough experience in the paid service side, you can go into bartering. So it's not just a work lifestyle app, it's a work life cycle app, meaning all throughout the arc of your life, starting from teenage to adult to retirement, you're either bartering paid services, doing paid services, or doing favors. I think in terms of like towards the twilight of people's life, when all the institution knowledge is sitting there with all of our sages, that ultimately they'll get on the app and they'll be able to help transfer some of their tribal knowledge to the younger folks by favoring. So it's a really important, it's a dear app to me. It means a lot. I've given a lot of thought to it. The hallmark of what I'm going to be talking about today is related to a national process. Much of what I've learned in that process is that it's best to really contract in private. We've grown up in our whole life thinking that it's best to really interact publicly. And I started out my speech sort of talking about how I grew up in the public sector with a public education. But what they lack to teach us is really how to interact with each other privately. When we interact with each other privately, I think that's when we actually do our best work, because it means that we can settle our affairs privately as men and women. And instead of having to go to our adult government to help us, you know, sort out our issues, we can do it for ourselves. So the app is, in essence, the AllSet app is in essence a way for us to really contract with each other privately And I know a lot of people always come up to me and say, hey, what about the taxes and what about, you know, job and labor and blah, 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 blah. Well, I think that, again, that goes to the fact that you have to understand a lot about what, you know, the national process looks like, and also understanding what legal versus lawful means. And, you know, the app itself really is trying to help people understand that you're trying to get labor for gig versus going to work and trying to get a job. And I know a lot of people don't understand the difference between what a job is versus a gig, but that really does make a world of difference between the public and the private. And so I guess with that, really, I'll go on with the national process, which I really enjoyed. I would say it's probably one of the best adventures I've had in my life, is really to uncover a lot of the unknowns. In 2015, 2016, I came across several videos on YouTube. This is when it was uncensored. And that was really interesting because you could actually see a lot of videos that were like, wow. And I remember seeing one African-American gentleman talking about a topic about how you aren't who you really think you are. And he talked about the straw man. And at that time, I felt like, oh, God, that's so avant-garde. What does that mean? But I kind of put it aside. And there was another gentleman who talked about sort of there was going to be a large change coming about. And this large change is going to change the world in ways that we never thought would be. And he really basically talked about the change in the COVID and how there's going to be a power structure change. And again, I didn't pay much attention to it. So I lay dormant for almost 3 years in 2019 when I launched my app, when I really had to concentrate and think about, like, with good intentions, like, what am I trying to bring out to the world, you know? It's important to really understand, like, what, you know, cause and effect is. And I really got that first taste of what that looked like in 2020, March of 2020, when I went to my gym on a Thursday afternoon, late afternoon, and I remember trying to check into the gym, and the clerk said, oh, we're closed down. We're getting ready to lock down. And I said, lock down for what? I hadn't had cable, so I don't know what was going on, but they were saying we're going to lock down. And I was like, oh, okay. So I went home. And the next day, I went for a bike ride on my road bike. I went to Santa Monica and was riding around. And I had never seen L.A., Los Angeles, so vacant in my life. Never in my life was it probably the most loneliest place I've ever seen. And I thought to myself, wow, this world's change. Everything that I knew is going to change going forward. Because if you can lock down not just only a city, but a country and the world, there's something really drastically, you know, off here. And through that time, I really heard a lot of words like mandates and ordinances, you know, staying 6 feet apart, that's a mandate. You're mandated to wear your mask. A lot of things that kind of made me think, why? Why are we doing this? And so I had to really look and figure out, you know, what it all meant. Because in the end, I had to figure out what the symbolism behind all of this means. And I think that's important also, because part of this journey is that you have to understand what supports the symbolism is the language. And I didn't really understand the language at the time. I really thought, you know, I went to college, I went to graduate school, so I really understand what this world is, but in actuality, I didn't. It's a fictitious world. And so, I guess, before I go into sort of my journey about the national process, just by a show of hands, I want to see how many people believe that we have one jurisdiction ruling United States. That's the Democratic Republic, the one that we know, the three branches. How many believe that we have one branch, one jurisdiction right now? Just one jurisdiction? Oh, no one? Okay, good. That's good. I like that. How many people believe now that there is actually two and possibly three jurisdictions that are overlaying? That's great. That is really wonderful. Yes, so right now there is two jurisdictions absolutely running in conjunction with each other. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we grew up understanding that we have a democratic republic, right? Basically, we thought that that's what it was. We had three branches. We had the legislative branch, which is made up of Congress, and that's made up of the House of Representatives and the Senate, right? They usually write the law into the executive branch, which is our president, who either passes it or votes or vetoes it. And then we live our lives, and then occasionally when we come across that law that sort of breaches our what we think the law should be, it gets pushed over to the judicial branch, which is the Supreme Court, right? And then it gets tried. One of those, one for example, is Roe versus Wade, right? That's been coming up quite often. So that is something that actually we thought growing up was going on. But in actuality, there's a second jurisdiction that is overlaying, and that really pertains to Article 1, Section 3, Clause 17, where Congress gets to rule over a specific section of the United States, which is D.C., parts of, I think, the Philippines, Puerto Rico, the Samoa Islands, and some other insular islands. But they basically get to enact all three of the branches that we just spoke about. They get to write the law, they get to pass the law, and they get to try it, which is pretty amazing amount of power that Congress has in those jurisdictions. That right now is also contemporaneously running across the United States. It's overlaid around the United States, which I think a lot of people aren't unaware of, and I think that's where we're sitting right now. My journey to the National, the first kind of meetups that I went to was really an introduction to Anna von Reitz. With Anna von Reitz, she basically gave me some really great insight onto the three jurisdictions, the law over the air, the law over land, and the law over the water. So those three jurisdictions were kind of the basically entrees to where I learned where we sit. Constitutionally, I think that, you know, we all believe that we all sit in the land, but Anna von Reitz will argue differently. She will say that we're all adrift if we haven't changed our national identity from citizenship to being a national. Her process really involves something rather simple. It's basically declaring yourself onto the land and then making a public notice. And in doing so, you basically either publish something in the newspaper circuit or you declare yourself on a talk show, a radio show, or something on where it gets published, essentially. And then I came across the second large advocator for the national process, which was David Strait. David Strait is a very interesting fellow. He's an ardent force to be reckoned with. He believes in all three jurisdictions as well, and he advocates that all of us should be very knowledgeable in all three jurisdictions. Because he really does, he thinks that in order to fight the powers to be, I think you have to be able to know how to use the language against the very same people in both in the air and the land and also in the water. His process is a little bit different than Anna von Reitz. You have to declare yourself through an affidavit of repudiation. So you have to basically write an affidavit declaring that you're a national and not a citizen. And he has the 33-page or so affidavit. Some of it's a little bit lengthy in its recourse, but discourse. But I would say, you know, if you were adamant about sort of those three jurisdictions, he definitely fights for that. The other piece of that, the other half of his declaration is then you have to publicly declare it in the county records. So in the county records, you have to then file your declaration, your affidavit of repudiation. I would say down the road, I actually came across a good friend of mine who introduced me to John Cassera, who I was a disciple of. I studied with him on Roger Sales' method, which is somewhat like David Straits. His is an affidavit of citizenship, and you declare yourself as a national and renounce your citizenship, U.S. citizenship. And then once you do that, you actually have to send it into the Secretary of State, and then you file for your passport with that. One key difference that I would say, if I back up for a little bit, David Strait usually suggests that you file for your passport in person first rather than submitting it to any other agency. So he thinks that that's the first step you should do, and then you should file it to the county record. Now, there's a lot of different other methods that I've come across. There's this one gentleman named Rondo, and he really focuses on the foreign sovereignty piece of it. So he applies for a more citizenship, which basically, or more national status, which allows him, I wouldn't say diplomatic immunity, essentially. That's what his method is. And that's based off the notion of being a human, which is the concept of hue being color, the pigment of your skin. So he has a very interesting method. There's also Robert Michaels, which I think is a very interesting method. His method is basically off of sovereignty, and he's basically using the common law method, in which you declare yourself expressing your sovereignty. He calls himself the House of Michael, I think. But his method is quite interesting because it runs along the same lines as the Law for Mankind, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a few minutes. And then I came across one of the legacy folks who does redemption process, which is the old process prior to all of these other processes. They kind of supersedes that. And along with that is piercing the nexus through the UCC. Winston Strauss. He's the other method, which is basically you utilize the Uniform Commercial Code to basically get hold of your straw man. And then there you can then be the owner of your trustee and or your trust, and then you're navigating through that process. That requires, again, more knowing the Admiralty Maritime Law, which I think, you know, if you don't have a strong understanding of that, it can be very tricky to do. In the end, I think all these three methods that I just talked about, the Anna von Reitz, the David Straits, or the Roger Stales, are kind of the methods that I feel like those are the ones that are helpful if you really want a concrete way of becoming a national. But I don't really promote it or denounce, you know, any of the methods. I think they're all equally, you know, you have to research them and figure out what works for you. Because each of the methods, you know, I felt, you know, I did a gut check, and some of them really worked for me, and then some didn't work for me. But today, and I'm not just sitting with a national title, because even though I have several titles that I hold, I know that that is just the legal fiction that I'm holding. I am, first and foremost, I said I'm a simple man in this world, because I think that's the most important thing. And, you know, one of my good friends, Eric, and I, when we started looking into further into what it means after all these titles, how do we really get hold of how we operate in this world? Because in the end, that's the most important thing. You can choose to operate under a certain title, but in the end, how do we act as men and women towards each other? And we came across this really great course called Law for Mankind, and it falls under the common law, basically. And if you don't know the difference between common law and statutory procedural law, in the common law, basically, it's you have to express your law versus in the legal world, in the procedural and statutory law, you basically have to. It's implied and contractually if you take on any benefits or privileges from the legal system. So if you haven't if you haven't rescinded on any of that, it is presumed then you are agreeing to the legal contract. So with that, I took a course for the Law for Mankind, and what it really helped me to focus on is like, how do I act on a daily basis? And because, you know, I've come across a lot of patriots and a lot of libertarians and freedom-minded folks, and, you know, I see them constantly going to protests. And I think protests are great, but I don't think that they necessarily will make huge markers into like how we're looking to get results. Because people don't really know how to operate as man and woman in this world. And when I say man and woman, it's because we didn't know how to operate in private. And so the Law for Mankind is one of those few courses where they actually tell you distinctly how to act and how we should figure out how to act amongst each other to contract. The three premise that it's built on is really, one, remaining honorable, two, decreasing controversy, and then three, always coming up with remedy. So how does that look like in everyday life? So just as a way of example, you know, if I came across driving here, or I should say traveling if you're a national. If I was traveling in my car and I accidentally bumped into another car and I decided not to stop but just move forward, what I've created is controversy. And without remedy, I've actually ran off. So now I've actually become dishonorable. And so in that, the best way that I can remedy the situation is to stop, exchange my number, ask if the person is okay, ask if there's anything that I can do to repair the damage that's been done. And if there was no damage and the person is fine, then we can go on our merry way. But if there was any damages done, then I will remediate the situation by financially paying for it or fix it myself. However way, that's the remedy. And now I've decreased the controversy. Because if I hadn't and I walked away from the situation, chances are that person would probably have called their insurance company, a lawsuit would have been ensued. We would have taken it to public, in a public space. But it's important to always contract privately first, if it's possible, before going into the public world, because otherwise we can't fix our own situation if we're trying to. We're looked upon as children, and the government looked at us and has to basically fix our affairs. And this goes across a lot of different areas, from marriages all the way to like accidents I just mentioned, to large, you know, contracts that we have with other people. I guess, you know, in the end, what I've really come across is that I've gone through a big journey in my life, and I've been advocating for a lot of people to really contract privately, and I've created a space where I feel like I can help people do that through my app. And so I really want to help people figure that out, and I'd love to see if you guys can, you know, take the course, maybe consider taking the course, because that really would help a lot. Because I think, you know, the protesting isn't going to be enough. I think what's going to really help is that we learned how to write notices against somebody like our governor, Newsom. I think, you know, especially like the mandates, I mean, applied to something that I think was meaningful in 2020 and 2021. Had we decided collectively, instead of just protesting, but we had all decided to write notices to the man named Newsom, we would have been able to address him privately and then actually press claims against him versus actually trying to just do protests. And I don't think we got anywhere far than where we got now. Because once you press claims, what you're doing collectively as a whole is you're starting to put a lot of liability against that politician. And liability is a very big red flag for them. I think we do more as a group to move the needle if we do it together that way. And it only takes a few minutes to write notices and press claims versus what we've been doing, spending hours and hours outside protesting. So with that, that's where I stand. Thank you so much, you guys.
All right. Thank you, Robert. So we'll have a brief question and answer period, and hopefully you can stay and answer a few questions. But please do make sure you limit it to questions and try to get them out quick so other people can ask their questions as well and learn from our speaker. And then we'll have an open mic period at the end, so don't worry about it. If you have something important you want to say, you'll get your chance. Anyway, Q&A with Robert. All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Adam. Okay. I realize that a lot of folks here already have this knowledge. Most of you guys are veterans and seem like you guys have a lot of knowledge about this space. I was hoping to get some more junior folks here. Are there any questions? Kenny, maybe you can turn on the mic for him.
Yeah. Okay, so it's been a while since I've seen you, Robert.
Yes.
yeah, I do have a question about Anna von Reitz. I looked into her materials, and it's so extensive and so confusing. How did you possibly navigate through all of that and come out with some understanding on the other side?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question, Adam. Yes, Anna von Reitz does. I think her book covers well over 200 or 300 pages worth of information. So it is a lot to read. I did read a majority of her information, but I did distill through it because in the end, I actually called several representatives and interviewed them and asked them what their method was and how they actually got through to the land. I'll say, you know, some of the things were more educational, you know, because like I said, she talks about getting on from the water into the land. And some of the things that I learned from her was just really insightful. Like the word bank, for example, a lot of people think of the word bank as a financial institutional word, right? You go in there and you deposit and your checks, you get money out of it. It's basically financial transaction. But truly, a bank, as we don't really reimagine it, but it actually is a wave for which waves actually get control in a river, right? A bank will control the current of a river. So the word bank and currency comes from that whole world of water. That jurisdiction of water is actually well known that we don't even know. That's why I said earlier that the symbol's very important, because without knowing the derivation of those words, we've been operating under the notion that we are living under one jurisdiction, but we aren't. We're actually living in a second jurisdiction. I did a lot of interviewing with a lot of representatives, and I had a lot of questions before I came down to decide, you know, if her method was right for me. But I did read a lot of her books and her information. So that's why I advocate, if you're going to go down this path, you really should be doing a lot of reading and research before you go down the national path. Thank you. Charles?
Hey, Robert. Hi. Thanks so much. Your talk was great, and you're very knowledgeable, and I enjoyed listening to you. I, too, was first got involved with when it was doing Redemption and Winston Stroud and all that, and luckily came to this meeting and met John and got on the right track. But also during that period, decades ago, where it was there was this sovereign citizen sort of thing that was bounced around too. And so anyway, I went to, you told me about this site. We had a discussion one day, and the law where men are men, women are women. And I went there, and I admit I didn't dive real deep, but it just seemed like a lot of sovereign citizen stuff. Could you, clarify or expound on that a little bit, please?
Sure. Yeah. It comes across a bit of us because their actual domain name is called Sovereign's Way. So that could easily be, I think, misconstrued that's the world that they live in. But it sits under the common law, basically. You're basically declaring yourself, you're expressing the law for you as an individual person, as a man or as a woman. So you're basically posting these no stop signs up when you're saying, for example, hey, Gavin Newsom, I'm writing you as from a man to another man. I'm letting you know that this is a notice and that I will not be taking any of your shots because they can harm me. And if you decide to pursue with this, I will press a claim of $1 million against you. Now, if we all did this collectively, can you imagine the liability that Gavin Newsom would face? So it's about the common law procedure. It's really under that jurisdiction of the land where you as a man individually declares what your parameters are from a law. You can say, you know what? Don't stand near, within 6 feet of me because I get claustrophobic. And if you do, again, that's saying that you're creating harm. So you have to prove those pieces, but you're essentially putting up the parameters first so that they can't park there. And Gavin Newsom, I'm sure, would not park there if he knew that you're going to put $1 million, claim against him. Now, a lot of people don't know the difference between a claim and a complaint. A lot of times people, when you're filing a complaint, you hear people legally saying, yeah, I'm filing a complaint. Well, again, that falls into the maritime law. That's the procedures and the statutory law. UCC, because what you're doing is you're complaining because you're a child and you haven't grown up and you need to be a man. If you're a man and a woman, you're on the lawful side and you're pressing a claim. And pressing a claim means that you will attach some monetary value, but you also are saying what kind of harm it's going to impress upon you. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Robert. I really love what you were saying. My question is, so what's the difference between putting somebody on notice, a claim, and a complaint? I mean, I know you just explained the complaint and the claim, but what about putting, is that the same thing?
So that's a brilliant question. Thank you, Jody, for asking that. I'll help protract that what I just said a little bit further. So in the early stages, what we're doing is you're notifying the person through a notice. And generally speaking, what happens is that notice gets a lead up to the claim. The claim is an actual piece that goes that you're filing to the court. And when you're filing against, when you get to a certain number of notices, right? Usually it's about 3 notices, and then after the 3rd notice, you're actually pressing the claim. The notice is just formally declaring to that person, the man or the woman, that they have created some sort of infringement or harm against your liberty, your life, and your property, one of the 3. And in that, you then press that claim. When you're pressing the claim, what you're doing is that you're saying, this is the Jody court. I'm coming in and this is what we're playing. We're playing tennis. We're playing basketball on this court. We're playing basketball and these are the rules of the basketball court. We're not playing, the legal court, which is, Batman. That's the game that they're playing. We're playing the Jody court. When you go through the law of mankind, you're creating your own court, your own law, your own institution. It's much different than when you're playing. The word court actually does mean what kind of game you're playing. Oh, wow. And most people don't understand that. So when you're going to the legal fictional world, you're playing, sometimes they're playing badminton, sometimes they're playing tennis, sometimes they're playing soccer. You really don't know because that's the game that they're playing. But when you're declaring and pressing claim, you're defining what that court looks like, and you know what the rules are. So you're not standing there in the court when they're asking you questions. You look like you don't know. You say one, you say, well, but the Constitution, they're like, you're going to be, you know, you're in contempt because you're playing a different court game than they're playing. Mm. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Pressing a claim means that you are a man, you've grown up, you understand what this world looks like. You're not asking the court to define what it is for you anymore. You're actually declaring all of that. You're expressing the law, and then you're actually then executing it. And you do it through a trial by jury and not by one of their courts. Because if you do it by one of their... And you can use their court, but you just have to set it up as a trial by jury. Because once you do that, then you have control of all of that. Okay. The course is very powerful. I'm telling you, even if you decide never to use it, it will forever change your life. You will know how to operate differently.
Wow, thank you.
Uh-huh. Hello.
Hi, Robert. My name's Ira.
Hi.
So if someone becomes a national, how does that affect? You mentioned something about government payments, Social Security or Medicare.
That's a brilliant question, Ira. Thank you for bringing that up. I didn't get to bring that up in the speech. I'm so happy when people bring up questions because there's so much ruminating in my head and I just can't seem to pull it all out. Once you become a national, the great question is the IRS, right? It's always the, like, how do we deal with, you know, our taxes and how do we deal with our finances privately? I mean, really, everything goes back to being private. Even though I do have a legal fiction here in California, I've restructured my company now, and I've done a different restructuring process. And I do have a person that I actually want to, if you want to speak with me afterwards, he's a really great person to actually help you with that process, both on a personal level and a legal fictional world. But essentially, there are ways that you can actually have a tax strategy, an IRS exit strategy, which I do. So I can give you that reference. But as a national, you don't necessarily have to pay. You don't have to pay for taxes. And that's really the short of the answer. Oh, receiving Social Security and benefits. We can talk a little bit more in private. That's the person I would like recommend you to. His name is Sean O'Connor. He's a really good person. He actually works in this realm. I don't receive any benefits and privileges, so I wouldn't be able to speak to you directly. But Sean O'Connor would be able to help you there. And I've looked into other places too. There's the Freedom School with Payman. Yeah. But Sean, I think, really has a good understanding of that, what you're asking for, which is the privileges, the benefits of the system. And he can help you navigate through that process. I couldn't answer that directly and without speaking off turn. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my question is if you could confirm the name of that course. Is it Law of Mankind?
Yes, sorry. Thank you, Rocky. It's Law for Mankind. And if you look up sovereigntiesway.com, that's where you can find it. But you can
That was my next question.
Yep.
Thank you.
Sovereigntiesway.com.
So I've been navigating the national process myself. And I've come across, like I was saying earlier with Anna Von Reitz, some other groups that are involved with the process too. And it gets so convoluted that I think people get overwhelmed. And is there any suggestions you have to help people navigate through this, what to avoid, what to concentrate on?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Adam. Anna Von Reitz is also trying to build a state assembly. I don't know if you're aware of that. So she's really trying to institute the whole reassembling of the assembly by getting people to become state nationals. and where they are basically each state will have a lead, and then there will be it's a spoken hub model where each of the states will have their representative, but then there will be nationals all around. And the idea is really, again, to create that support for what I just mentioned earlier, which is a trial by jury. That's the essential piece of it, because our courts right now have been taken over. Our judicial system have been overtaken on so many levels that we don't even know, because we think that we're actually going to one court that's, you know, going to be that will follow the Constitution, but they actually don't, because they're actually under the Democratic Republic. They're not following that method any longer. They're actually been following more of the statutory law, and the more important it, because our world is now laden with commercial transaction, it's fallen under the merchant law, basically the Uniform Commercial Code. And so that's where we're having a difficulty around that. But I diverged a little bit. Essentially, our state assemblies are really trying to formulate that so that we could have a more just society now, so that we can take back our community and our society. There are representatives for each state. I believe there's one representative. I can dig up the name for her if you want me to, and she can speak to you directly and explain to you like what the process is. Okay. Yeah, so each state does have a key contact person. I think, is it? Yes. Yes, exactly. Okay, right. So you have the information. Yeah, okay. Does that help a little bit, or does that... okay.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, Kenny.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I've taken John's course, and it was probably about 10 hours long, mm-hmm. and it was very informative, but at the end of it, my head's just spinning, and... I know this is something that I want to do, uh-huh. and I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. I'm just a little bit hazy on the first step, or you know, clarity on how to get started.
Sure. Roger Sell's method, by the way, is a very interesting method, because he explains it in a way that I think it's probably the most accurate to reality right now. He talks about how we have basically been chattled into serfdom, basically. So in the 21st century, we've basically reverted back to the lord and serf milieu, essentially. And so in doing so, what happened is after the Civil War, there was the term citizenship was in question, and it was basically a title that had to be given to the African slaves. And so they, without giving them all the rights that they deserve, they came up with a title called citizenship. And we all agree that we're all citizen, but when you do that, what happens is then you're all chattled into the serfdom that Roger Sales talks about, and there we're chattled into this slavery, essentially. And in order to get out of that, we just basically have to declare ourselves that we are not a U.S. citizen, that we're nationals instead. And to do that, the first step is really to write a affidavit of citizenship. I believe that... John Kosarov has a template that actually outlines it. It's probably about 9 bullet points, maybe 10, 11 at the best. And then you want to make sure you understand each of those items. But that's basically you're saying you're declaring yourself a national versus you're no longer a citizen. You're not part of this chattel that that has put you into the serf title.
But do each of these methods give you... it's the same outcome in the end, though.
That is correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
That was partially what I was concerned about.
But I say that in a general sense. But if you talk to David Strait, he would say differently. Anna von Reitz would also probably disagree on that a point, because they believe that they're a state assembly. They're American state nationals. They're all a different flavor, but they're all basically, in short, national. That it's holding a different title than a citizen.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Kenny.
Hello, Rob. One of my favorite people ever. Seriously.
Hi, Gia. How are you? Great to see you.
Thanks. Quick question. Have you heard of the state grand jury?
I have, but I think that's also the so if I'm recalling this correctly, Anna von Reitz had a little bit falling out with her group.
Oh.
And there was a group that much like, you know, a group that we know, reassembled and formed a different group. And now they're forming very similar to what is the state assembly, is that equivalent.
Oh, got it, got it.
That's the grand, yeah, the grand.
Okay. That's why I thought about it when you said state assembly. I thought of the state.
It's okay. The equivalent to the same, but in a different, but the pull-out group, the group that, the group that formed differently.
So the state grand juries actually come under officially the county. Like on the official county website? Do you know if the state assembly that she's doing is also officially under the county or the...
No, I think they're not in that, even within the... So when you fall into the county jurisdiction, you're operating under the statutory procedural law. What Anna von Reitz wants to do is officially operate outside on the land. What?
Got it.
Yeah, the grand jury will be actually within the... the maritime law.
Got it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Are there any other questions? Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody, for your time and your participation. I really appreciate your... Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Robert. That was very enlightening, especially the stuff about the language of the maritime law. You know, your birth certificate. What is a berth? That's where you park a ship. And when you're born, you go through the birth canal. That's all maritime. It's very interesting to study all that stuff. So thanks again, Robert. I wanted to talk today about something that's been on my mind having to do with our people's rights group. So we've got nearly 700 people signed up as members of people's rights here in California Area 10. But we consistently have the same 30 or 40 people show up at our meetings. And so... what I want to do is say something to the people that aren't showing up. And so I was hoping, Brendan, that you could film a separate video of this part, because I want to send it out to the members. Okay. So what situation are we really in? And what do we want to do with this group? I think, you know, after hearing our wonderful speakers that we've had over these many weeks, it's all geared towards one thing, and that is winning back our liberty and getting our country back and restoring our constitutional republic to what it's supposed to be. But that is not going to be an easy fight, and we need everybody, we need all hands on deck. And so I thought I would read something from, I get emails from what's called the 10th Amendment Center, and they are all about nullifying bad laws. But anyway, I wanted to read to you what they said, because it applies to us today, very much so. So this is a message I got from them. So going from the largest government in history to a true land of the free won't happen fast, and it won't be easy either. We've got a fighting chance thanks to the wisdom, advice, and strategy of the founders and the old revolutionaries. The American Revolution was about much more than the war for independence. In fact, as John Adams noted, the revolution was effected before the war even commenced. A radical change in the principles, opinions, sentiments, and affection of the people was the real revolution. So here's four essential principles from the revolution to help the people set the foundation for the Constitution and liberty, whether the government wants us to or not. So number one, rights are not gifts from the government. It is not really liberty if it requires a government-issued permission slip. So that's why I always say I will never get a permit to protest. If you get a permit, you just lost the whole point of the protest. Okay? So when it comes to the founders and the old revolutionaries, that means we're talking about natural rights. Rights are not gifts from the government. It's not really liberty if it requires a permission slip. So Samuel Adams put it this way in 1772. Among the natural rights of the colonists are these. First, a right to life. Second, to liberty. Third, to property. Together with the right to support and defend them in the best manner that they can. These are evident branches of, rather than deductions from, the duty of self-preservation, commonly called the first law of nature. In 1776, John Dickinson reminded us that our liberties do not come from charters, for these are only a declaration of pre-existing rights. So one comment I wanted to add is I heard a constitutional scholar say that if an emergency situation like COVID could come up and that granted the government the power to override the Constitution, then the Constitution would be meaningless and pointless because they could just simply declare an emergency and rule it null and void. So that's why there are no provisions for nullifying the Constitution. Because they can't do it. They're not supposed to do it, and we got to stop them from doing that. Anyway, to go on, Thomas Paine noted that it's a perversion of terms to say that a charter gives you rights. Constitutions don't enforce themselves. They never did, and they never will. Writing in support of ratification, Dickinson, who was a primary author of the Articles of Confederation, acknowledged that even the best constitution can only promote a good administration, but it can't guarantee it. In Federalist 48, James Madison lamented that many seem to rely on the ability of documents to restrain government power. But he wrote that such a parchment barrier could never do the job on its own. A mere demarcation on parchment of the constitutional limits of the several departments is not a sufficient guard against the encroachments which lead to a tyrannical concentration of all the powers of government in the same hands. In short, something else is needed to keep a government in check beyond pointing them to the rules they're supposed to follow. It's up to the people to defend their own constitution and their own liberty, whether the government wants them to or not. Dickinson emphasized that enforcement of the Constitution is ultimately up to the supreme sovereignty of the people. It's their duty to watch and their right to take care that the Constitution be preserved. Thomas Jefferson put it this way: a free people claim their rights as derived from the laws of nature and not as a gift from their chief magistrate. A future Supreme Court justice named James Iredell summed it up like this: during the North Carolina ratifying convention. The only resource we have against usurpation is the inherent right of the people to prevent it. So it's not just a mere good idea or something to try after everything else fails. The only resource is for us to prevent those things from happening. It's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be fast. To go from the largest government in history to an actual land of the free is not going to be quick. So in a 1790 letter to his friend, Reverend Charles Clay, Thomas Jefferson gave us the strategy that we can follow. The ground of liberty is to be gained by inches. Each step forward needs to be relentlessly followed by another one, and another, and another. We must be contented to secure what we can get from time to time and eternally press forward to what is yet to get. There is no silver bullet to take down this empire. It'll take tireless fortitude and perseverance. Because, as Jefferson knew, it takes time to persuade people to do even what's in their own best interests. Facing the monster state of today isn't going to be easy. We won't, as Jefferson noted, go from despotism to liberty in a feather bed. But as the old saying goes, duty is ours. You know, a lot of people seem to prefer sugarcoating how bad things really are, especially at a time like this, when every message we see is about choosing Team A or Team B, or vice versa, for the fate of everything under the sun. But we prefer straight shooters. When it gets down to it, Thomas Paine summed it up the best. Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigues of supporting it. So that's what we have to do as a group. We have to come together and fight for this country and fight for our rights. And more of us have to get involved. And I'm speaking specifically to all the people out there that are watching these videos, getting the texts from People's Rights System, and not showing up at the meetings and not really doing anything to promote our liberty. We need you here. You've been called to duty. So that's all I have to say. Thanks.